This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
This is AmTower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark AmTower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. AmTower Off-Center with your host, Mark AmTower.
Welcome to AmTower Off-Center on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis, longtime friend, business development and marketing guy with a serious track record in the government market. Welcome to the show, Bob.
Thank you, Mark. Glad to be here.
It's been a while. it's been a couple of years since you've been here. Be that as it may, give people a little background so they understand that there's credibility to what you're about to share with me in the show.
Mark, I have worked in the Washington area in the federal government market in technology products and services firms in different capacities for a few decades, actually. And have spent quite some time in different positions studying the market, studying the industry, and in recent years have taken positions in primarily marketing and helping companies understand how marketing has morphed and is currently changing today.
Okay. And also a couple of years back, you went back to school and grabbed a PhD. Basically, one of the first PhDs I've ever seen in business development.
That's correct. I did some of the first formal work with my dissertation in the area of business development in systems integration firms.
And I actually read it.
Well, you're the second person, Mark.
your committee had to read it, but that's beside the point.
Yeah.
So the basic premise of the show here is we're going to talk about various aspects of marketing. But from my perspective, historically, the most successful companies in the government market have always embraced marketing as a support function for sales, BD, and capture. And the best of those companies have literally invited marketing to the table when it comes to sales meetings, BD meetings, the overall planning meetings. So not only does marketing understand the directions of each of the activities, the activities understand what marketing brings to the table. Is that relatively accurate from your perspective?
Yes. I think until recent years, marketing was a support function that supported business development, capture management, activities with customers, key customers, produced collateral and presentations and supported trade shows, and that was their traditional role in the company.
Okay, so you have you and I talk about this personally on a regular basis, but let's back up a decade or two back when the government market was really a bull market. So,
I'm glad you brought that up, Mark. The up until about 2010, 2011. Our industry was in a bull market for decades. The budget grew 2-4% year in and year out. There was plenty to bid. There was more opportunities to bid than you could actually bid. If you bid enough work, you won 25-30%. You were making a living. If you won more than that, you were really growing and being financially successful. Operations dealt with the current customers, primarily business development chased new customers. And again, there was enough activity that they could meet at the monthly program or step reviews and kind of do their thing, and the company continued to grow. And as I mentioned, marketing was a sort of a sub-function that just dealt with brochures and presentations and websites and tabletop shows. And that whole scenario went away.
Okay. The whole scenario went away because of the sequestration, the budget?
Sequestration, budget pressures, continuing pressure on all levels of business. Large businesses are going after much smaller deals now. When companies win contracts now, even in GWAC, IDIQs, they have 10, 20, 30, 40, 50 competitors. So it's a whole different market today.
Okay. So the BD model, the sales model back then was to basically, you know, go into an agency, build rapport if you didn't already have the rapport, and then you know, follow the contract as it evolved into an actual vehicle, and then go to bid.
Yes, traditionally BD, as you mentioned, Mark, met with a customer, developed rapport, tried to build some trust, shared some technical or management information, was hopefully asked to bid, and then submitted bids. That was the old model. We're now in a totally different model where the characteristics are you've got a market shrinking in terms of opportunities, not in terms of overall dollars, but the number of opportunities to bid are less and sometimes less often. You have continuing sequestration and LPTA pressure. It's continuing. It has not let up. Incumbent contracts are in everybody's gun sights, and we're seeing a lot of incumbent contracts that are not renewed. And there are many more competitors that frankly have little or no distinct brand. And companies are having a hard time getting themselves known beyond their current customer. That's characteristics of today's bear market.
Okay, so since the evolution or the migration to the bear market, we're seeing the market shrink not only in terms of dollars, and you indicated this, fewer new opportunities. So the competition for the recurring vehicles, for example, Sub 5, which expanded their temporary announcement of winners, basically doubled the number of winners. And that's not huge considering Soup, because they only had like 37 before, and they bumped it up to about 80 protest hits. We'll see how Joanne and her folks handle all of that. And you mentioned the LPTA sequestration too. What are companies going to have to do to not only compete successfully for these vehicles, but to win task orders once they are on those vehicles?
That's a very important question. One of the fundamental steps is the issue of having an integrated business development function. Which means that business development is across the fabric of the organization. Are they working hand in hand with operations, the line people, developing a new business with existing and new customers? Are they sharing information beyond monthly meetings? This is a important attribute and frankly gives you insight into the culture of the organization in terms of generating new business. Are the program managers and deputy program managers and tech leads understand their role in terms of organic growth? Have you conducted organic growth training so they know what to do, how to do? And even if the notion of business development is an anathema to them, they really aren't comfortable with it, do they at least know who to call? Do they know who to contact when they hear specific kinds of information? So this is a fundamental element. In parallel with this, there's the whole notion of how marketing has morphed in recent years.
Okay, let's back up a little bit then, at least for the rest of this segment. The you keep referring sort of to the culture of the organization. How many, you know, give me a guesstimate on how many companies or what percentage of companies are still living in a 90s kind of model here? Because I do a lot of coaching for companies on developing the subject matter expert status, which is basically positioning your company or branding your company for particular skill sets. You're out there a lot. So what percentage of companies are operating in a mode that's not going to help them at all?
My guesstimate, Mark, is we're in the 85%, 90% range. There are two reasons here. One, the current management of a lot of companies grew up in the business in the 80s and 90s, where winning business was relatively easy, making your numbers was relatively easy. So they have a certain framework and pattern of success, and they sort of expect it to continue, and they expect it of everyone around them, and that's how they set some of the metrics for business development and capture. The second dynamic here is a lot of the management today has backgrounds in engineering, finance, operations, program management. Very few have backgrounds in marketing or have formal marketing education, and so they don't consider sometimes opportunities or dynamics within the company through a marketing lens. And that is why they're very slow to embrace attributes of the current marketing framework, which I informally call marketing 3.0.
Okay. I'm experiencing the same thing. I have a lot of calls and a lot of requests for proposals from companies that want that subject matter expert status. And when I give them my proposal, they go through it, and rather than accept the holistic approach, they basically pick out a Band-Aid. Well, we really only need to win this one program right now. What can you do? Can you give us some names of people at that age? And, you know, it's an extremely myopic way to run a business.
Yeah, and there's a conceptual dynamic here that's extremely important. Customers used to buy tomatoes and lettuce and carrots and onions. And you can see that through a lot of the hardware and software sales that dominated in the 80s and 90s. Customers want to buy salads. They want to buy meals. If you turn that concept around, companies are in a situation that they need to consider meals and salads and not be picking and choosing parts and pieces to try to go to the market and shape their brand identity.
Okay. We're going to take our first break. My guest today is Bob Davis. You can find Bob at Robert1.Davis@comcast.net. Find him on LinkedIn, too. I'm Mark Amtower. You're listening to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. My guest today is Bob Davis. Bob, by the way, has taught for me on occasion, and the first time Bob was 20 years ago now, back in 94, 95. You did a BD course for me, and you've probably done a couple of those for me over the years. But, so Bob and I have known each other a long time. But he had this notebook once upon a time where he'd send me the updates via email. And this notebook was one fat three-ring binder, son of a gun. And, I mean, it was a perpetual update kind of thing. So it was quite cool. So we've known each other a while. There's a comfort factor here. So if you get the feel that we've been over this material before, you'd be right. So I want to beat this horse up a little bit more. These people who come in and they say, you know, Mark, we really are a thought leader. We own this niche. You know, we haven't gotten the word out the way we should. Help us. So I come back with a proposal. The proposal is going to take, you know, if they're really good, several months to probably a year to really develop the position. It's not extraordinarily expensive, but there is definitely a financial and a time commitment here. But they come back and they go, well, we really only need to position ourselves as the thought leader for this particular task order right now. We'll come back later for the rest of it. How frequent is that?
Well, I you've hit upon a key point. A lot of people today that are under tremendous pressure for revenue, they're trying to make cash flow. They believe if they get the correct one or two Band-Aids, they can do a fix to a problem, or they can position themselves for a deal. What they should be looking at is, to use a blunt term, the cure. In other words, how do they change their culture?
Yeah.
So a lot of the marketing attributes that we are talking about become part of their infrastructure, not simply any other corporate function.
Well, that, and that's, I mean, it's frustrating for me because I don't believe the Band-Aid works for a particular task order. If you're going to position yourself as a thought leader, you do it for the market, not for a small chunk of business. And it's frustrating for me, and it makes it much less likely that I'll pay attention when they call back in 6 months, because I know that there's no real commitment there.
Yeah, so, and there, if I may add, there's a subtlety here. A lot of small and medium-sized businesses, they have the same customers, they use the same technology, they chase the same business, they use the same tools to chase the same business, they have the same internal processes. So then the question becomes, if they're going to strengthen their brand identity, what do they do? If they're going to have real discriminators, what do they do? The issue is not so much pushing the company's name as it is pushing the company's expertise or subject matter knowledge. So their number one asset is their knowledge base and experience of their subject matter experts. That is unique to them. No other company has that combination of talent and people. And to that end, how is their expertise and knowledge visible outside the company? And this is where the marketing function should help make them more visible. And they can do this. One of the ways to do this is, of course, through the website. But then you get into the problem of quantity. A small business or medium-sized business simply cannot compete with a large company in terms of quantity. So what they have to focus on is quality, success stories, quality relationships with customers, qualitative and quantitative metrics as a result of their work that show value add, that show productivity increases. Remember, we're now in the world of digital marketing. Today, a curious customer will go online to find information, to educate themselves about a topic. They may read a blog. They may read a white paper. They may identify a subject matter expert that helps them understand an issue. They may send them an email. They may not. They may invite the company in to meet to talk about the particular topic at hand. There may be very few, if any, face-to-face meetings with business development throughout this process. After this period of time, the company may be invited to bid. But if you don't have your best wares in the window for people who are window shopping, you are simply not visible. And today, people are looking for expertise and knowledge. They're looking for people that have been there and done that. You have to present this information.
Yeah. So, I mean, basically, you're talking about branding a company, standing out, developing that subject matter expert platform. But how many, you know, again, I think we're going to go back to the 85% mark. But what's your guess on, you know, how many companies really look plain vanilla when somebody's searching for that, you know, upgraded butter pecan, whatever the, you know, whatever analogy you want to draw here. But give me a feel.
So. I having looked at many websites and read many brochures over the year mark, over the years, I believe that 85-90% have the same brand image. They use the same language. They're providing the same services to the same customers using the same technology. And evidence of this is when the government essentially says through LPTA, if I think you can do the work, I'm going with low price. That is pure proof that the government doesn't see any distinction or discriminators.
Or hasn't been educated, that there are legitimate differentiators in virtually any technology anyway. There may be fewer when it comes to, you know, number two lead pencils. But again, if you know, furniture is going to be targeted by strategic sourcing soon, and this is a really good case in point, because there's really great furniture, and there's arguments for it, and there's okay furniture, and then there's really crappy stuff. And if you go LPTA, you're probably going to end up with more crappy stuff and not the chairs that are ergonomically better for you, make you more productive, and last longer. So your initial investment for the right chair may be, you know, $350 after you beat somebody up. Your LPTA is going to get you that $59.95 special from, you know, XYZ company who just bought it from China. And it's going to last you, you know, maybe a year if you're really lucky. And the productivity is going to drop because it's just a crappy chair.
Yep.
So, you know, it's one of those things where you get what you pay for, and you know, better beware what you ask for. So we've got a couple of minutes left in this segment. How should companies start to morph? What's the ideal scenario here for migrating out of that 70s, 80s, 90s mode of marketing is really the you know, the Band-Aid helper to 2015.
Customers today expect resolution of their inquiries, and what I mean is, if you look at a consumer model, if I am a consumer and I want to buy something, I go to the website and I'm looking for specific information, and I expect it to be there. I expect the site to be easy to navigate. I expect to be easy to ask a question or get my concerns resolved. And if, in effect, customers expect on-demand resolution of their inquiry. If I have to go to a website and fish and fish and fish, I'm not going to take the time to do it, when you consider, of course, that most people are at a web page for 2.5 seconds or 3 seconds if they don't see what they want immediately. In effect, your website has to become your BD avatar. Let me repeat that. Your website has to become your business development avatar. So the design of the website, the navigation of the website, the search engine optimization, the content generation of the website becomes extremely important and requires engagement by the entire organization, not a couple of technical writers sitting in marketing. The website is now a platform for collaboration.
Hold that thought. Let's take a deep dive into the website after the break. My guest today is Bob Davis. Again, you can find Bob Davis on LinkedIn or Robert1.Davis@comcast.net. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Back after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis. Bob, the deep dive into the website. I do a review of websites primarily for companies outside of the government our market, to help them develop a government page when they're coming into the government market, and to make sure it's robust, informational, has everything needed for whatever market segment they're going after. I've done it occasionally for companies already in the market, but most of the companies in the market, you know, the companies we're talking about are largely focused almost exclusively on the government, but they're still missing major chunks. So something as seemingly simple as having a share button on the page, so you can share it via LinkedIn, you can share it via Twitter, you can post it to Facebook, you can put it in Google Plus, you can share it via email.
Yeah, you bring up a key point, Mark. A company I'm working with today made a fundamental decision in 2013 to go outside the company and had a professional website firm develop the site. It was not free. It took some money to do that. And our site was completely redesigned and modernized. And features and options and I'll say bells and whistles that we would have not thought of were added to the site to make it, frankly, more glamorous and more attractive and more offer more functionality. This is an important point because 80% of the companies out there, many of which do website development, hey, we do this for a living. We can do our own website. We know what we're doing. Or they run into the problem that a manager's nephew wants to do the website, so they go give it to that person who's working, of course, in good faith and doing the best they can. But this, again, is too important to not have expert talent to look at it. The website, as I was mentioning, is a platform for collaboration, for information exchange. It is not an electronic billboard.
So it's not brochureware.
It's not brochureware. Very important.
Okay. Well, yeah, and if it's not interactive, number one, you're still operating in the 1990s model when the concept of Web 2.0 was brought to the fore, and Mr. O'Reilly brought his Gov 2.0 conference to D.C. I wish I'd come back, by the way. That was pretty cool. But when that came, the Gov 2.0 thrust is that the web is a two-way street. We want a conversation going on here. Customers want to be able to ask questions that are very germane to exactly their situation. And if they can't do this, they'll find an organization where they can do it.
Yes, and you bring up a key point. I'm aware of situation that arose in 2013 on two occasions where the government mentioned to the prime bidder during a debrief that when they went to the company's website during the proposal evaluation process, they were looking to see if the work proposed in the bid was in fact a major line of business for the company. They did not see that there, so they got the impression that the company wanted to do this work and had done a little bit of it, but really wasn't a major strength.
Wasn't a focus.
Yeah. It was not a focus. Bad, bad, bad.
Well, I mean, you know, and here's the thing. You lead with your technical strength, and it doesn't mean you're not going to be able to do other things once you're there, but you have to be known for something. But your website should start to incorporate the tangential and secondary things that you do as well. You have to demonstrate that expertise, but don't demonstrate areas of expertise where you have none.
Correct. Because the claims that you make at the website, you must be able to provide evidence to back up your claim.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about the content side of this equation. We're talking about companies being able to develop the, you know, subject matter expert thought leadership platform to brand themselves in a particular, probably technological arena, but it doesn't have to be technological. It can apply literally to any discipline out there. So what kinds of content are feds looking for here?
The traditional content are white papers, and they do not have to be long. They can be 5 to 8 pages. I have seen white papers 30, 40 pages long.
That's an ebook.
But that's an ebook. But white papers that present an issue from a management or technical perspective is one approach. Blogs, microblogs that are one paragraph, or longer blogs that might be 500-600 words that discuss a technical or management issue. Customer success stories where you're able to identify the customer, or at least the agency, and talk about the problem, the work you did, and the outcomes. The outcomes, extremely important. Maybe abbreviated technical presentations, slideware, PowerPoint presentations that are 5, 6, 7 slides, not too much to download. You might have guest bloggers, people who are respected speakers in your market, in your customer base, that occasionally post at your site. You might have ask a question facility. You might have various 2-minute, 3-minute videos. You might have a customer newsletter online and in paper. And most importantly, you must pay attention to LinkedIn, which I know, Mark, you are well familiar with. A lot of companies are treating that as an oh, by the way, when that's becoming increasingly important.
Well, it's not only increasingly important. I believe it is definitely part of the entire government contracting ecosystem at this point. 1.4 million feds, at least, on LinkedIn. All of the contracting community, or the vast majority of the contracting community, is here. But the activity level is what can really support everything else here. But I want to pick a couple of these pieces of content. Blogs are I believe, critical. But too many people probably shouldn't write. Too many people, post occasionally. So in the case of not writing, not being able to write, not being able to enunciate clearly what your area of expertise is, well, what's a solution here?
Well, one solution is putting together a presentation, the 5, 6, 7 slides that presents an issue and a framework or system or architecture on how to solve it. So you're not doing a lot of writing there. Another approach, which is the whole speaker circuit, is that you participate on an industry panel. So you're not standing up and giving a 30 or 40 minute talk, but maybe you talk for 5 minutes and answer some questions. Another approach is to be the subject matter expert, so that when a general question does come in through your ask a question facility, you're a person that can answer a specific question, because you certainly have the technical credentials to do that.
Yeah. One of the things that, and I just did one of these yesterday, I had an inquiry from somebody who was looking for a ghostwriter. There's a lot of freelancers out there. A lot of the publications cut back on their professional writing staff. So these people are now available for freelance gigs. And I sent off my friend Matthew Weigelt, who used to write regularly, maybe still does for Federal Computer Week, but he's not staff anymore. He's a freelancer. So I send people like Matthew lots of leads. I don't write for other people because my style does not lend itself to objective views for clients. Everything I write has a particular point of view, but the freelancers are also there. But getting that message out in a coherent, regular fashion is going to help these companies. And I think that's part of the equation that they really miss, that regular.
Yeah, we run into the problem that people say, well, so-and-so can't write or isn't a good writer. And if you don't put them in a position with support resources to help them improve their writing, to help them learn, they never get there. A company has a professional obligation to allow people to contribute when they can or learn when they can, and say, well, no, they can't help with this proposal because they don't know how to write. That's an excuse. And as time goes on and that technical person is never asked to write, is never asked to develop a graphic, you're shortchanging them because you're not letting them improve their skills, and you're not developing the next generation of contributors.
Yeah, and the well, let's take a break here. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We'll pick up this on the other side of the break. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. My guest today is Bob Davis. Bob is a longtime BD and marketing professional in the government market, having worked with a variety of large and small companies, both as an employee and as a consultant. One of the things that one of the reasons I wanted to have you on here is you had kind of a checklist that was thought-provoking. Is your company ready for digital marketing? Why?
Marketing function has morphed quite a bit from the old days of product, place, price, promotion, the 4 P's of marketing that many of us were taught in our undergraduate business school. In the 60s, 70s, 80s, and even the early 90s, those 4 P's were okay. Today, as we leap from what I call marketing 1.0 to marketing 3.0, that does include digital marketing, we're now looking at services, which are a product, and considering digital branding and touch point management. Place is online, offline, and mobile, the old bricks and click. Promotion requires integrated marketing and focusing on the customer experience. Participation requires ongoing relationships, networks, being active in groups, for example, LinkedIn. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about digital marketing, you've heard me today talk a lot about the website. When I say website, I'm implicitly including smartphones, tablets, iPods, responsive web design, so that whatever your content is, it's available across any device or platform. There's a saying in marketing, which is people under 35 are in the digital world. People over 55 are in the paper world. And from a digital marketing standpoint, you really have to cover both. There are people that expect to see something clear on their smartphone. There are people that do, in fact, want to download a paper. My thoughts here are focused on the organization having an integrated view of marketing. And in fact, marketing, as I said earlier, becoming part of the organization's infrastructure, where all departments and all functions are plugged into this circuit. And it's not just viewed as something they do at headquarters. It's too important to the organization. It really requires a cultural change that involves open communication, collaboration, participation in content generation, looking for opportunities to recognize stakeholders external to the company, which is customers, partners, subcontractors, consultants, and stakeholders within the company, which are primarily employees or consultants that may work in the company, to give everybody a voice, to give everybody a way to contribute.
Okay. Just to throw out a stat there, when you're talking about the mobile aspect, the stats for LinkedIn for 2013 showed that 41% of the traffic on LinkedIn in 2013 was from a mobile device. And that was a radical jump from 2012. I believe it was about a 12 or 14% jump in the traffic. So we can anticipate a very similar jump to probably over 50% of the traffic on LinkedIn when the final stats for 2014 come out. That's huge. I mean, you know, it's a fact of life. So those websites that are not optimized for mobile consumption are potentially losing half of their eyeballs.
Yeah. As tablets replace PCs or desktops, and as smartphones replace tablets in future years, it's extremely important that your company learn how to present itself, its digital marketing, through, frankly, a handheld device. This will become an important discriminator. The ability to do this in a sophisticated manner will become a discriminator in and of itself.
Okay. Now, let's go back to the website as a static platform, the brochureware that was really the initial concept of the 90s. Everywhere I go on the web for the contracting community, I still see a lot of static websites. And I view it as opportunity, but I know if I make a call, especially a cold call or even a warm call, that the reception is going to be, well, you know, it seems to work for us or something like that. And it really doesn't.
Yeah, one of the hardest things to do is to have somebody outside the organization come in and look at something and give you a report card. And to that end, I have had external people look at websites where I've been and give me frank, brutally candid feedback about what's there, what isn't there, what's missing, and what's broke. In spite of living and breathing a website year in and year out, you're going to miss something. And it's too important to assume that your internal development group or one of the manager's nephews is going to catch everything.
Yeah. And you know, when you talk about integrating the marketing function into this overall concept and having this robust website, you really have to integrate all of your digital activities. So if you have the official company Twitter feed, the official company LinkedIn presence, Facebook presence, Google Plus presence, whatever you have out there, these have to be integrated into the website as well. So you're taking not simply driving traffic from say LinkedIn to your website, you're driving traffic back so they can look at detailed profiles of key subject matter experts on LinkedIn. It's going to be a heck of a lot easier, a heck of a lot faster to adapt your SMEs, your subject matter experts profile on LinkedIn than it will be on your website.
Yes, one of the things that impressed me back in early 2013, a company near Raleigh, North Carolina, I was looking at their website, and it had a tab called SMEs, and so I clicked on it, and a person's face came up, and right beneath it, it had two or three topics that they were subject matter experts on, and if you clicked on those buttons, you went direct to their email. Now, that was impressive to me. They said right up front, here's our expert. You want to ask him a question? Here they be. And it even got more exciting when there were 220 of these people posted at the website that covered about every technical subject you could imagine. I'm not suggesting every company do that, but that gave me confidence that they stood by their people and knew what they were talking about.
It's also not a very small company if they had 220 or so experts probably covering close to 600-700 topics. But yeah, I mean, it's funny. I won't name the company, but one of the think tanks that I was advising on leveraging LinkedIn a year or so back, all of the profiles read consultant at this particular company, right? And these were really, truly world-class thought leaders in various niches. Simply changing their LinkedIn profiles to incorporate the keywords that feds are going to search on, that contractors are going to search on, that anybody's going to search on, including those keywords and phrases in the title, the headline of the people right under your name on the profile, this started driving task order business to that company.
That's the whole point of the exercise.
Yeah, and so when let's wrap this back. If you winning a spot on an IDIQ or a GWAC guarantees you what?
It guarantees you an opportunity to spend money to see if you might bid some work.
So it doesn't guarantee you squat. And that's the, if you're on Alliant, if you're on Eagle, if you're on Soup, it doesn't matter. You still have to win business. And the way to win business includes?
You have to do all the standard stuff with task order management, IDIQ PMOs, efficient bidding, answering the mail, putting out a good proposal with a good price. And at the same time, you have got to try to establish relationships, do the old-fashioned stuff. But if you don't have 25 business development people crawling around, you better have your digital marketing story together.
There you go. Bob, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you, Mark. Good to be here. We'll talk again.
We will indeed, sir. This is not my day job. I do advise companies on various aspects of marketing to the government, establishing that subject matter expert or thought leadership platform. I teach a lot of companies about how to leverage LinkedIn, both from a C-level perspective and a collective, a company perspective. So if you're interested in that, drop me a line, mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you very much for listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.